outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
So I operated as a puppy finder this week.
You did?
I did.
New service you're starting?
A random connection. Yeah, a friend of mine from Spain that happened to be living in Fort Collins, Colorado, and had been looking for a puppy, and everything that they'd found in the Front Range was either really, really expensive or very, very sketchy. And I was able to help connect them with a good friend of mine in Torrington that had some chocolate labs. And so I sent a fur baby home with a good friend from Spain.
Oh, my
very,
gosh.
Very random this week.
So he came up to pick it up, huh?
Yep, she did. Yep, she came up and got it. And I was laughing because she was so excited and so exuberant about how great this was going to be. And in my mind, I was thinking, oh, how great and how crazy your life is about to become, because you just volunteered yourself for sleepless nights, 2-hour potty rotations, and basically one of the best birth controls you can have as an early 20 something.
But they're such joyful creatures. My goodness.
They are. And this one was so cute. A chocolate lab.
Yeah.
Super, super docile, just curled up in her arms and fell asleep as soon as she met the puppy. And so that's how we got our first dog, Louie. Is we went to a rescue and we were just going to look at these puppies, and he crawled into Jess's lap and fell asleep, and that was the end of it. We went home with a puppy.
Well, very few things that are joyful come pain-free.
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you guys got a 1-year-old, less than 1-year-old. What do you got over there? I forget. Yeah, less
10-month-old.
Than 1-year-old. Yeah, 10-month-old.
Yep.
The joyful things in life, they do come with a cost. And that's why when you try to live a pain-free life, you end up saying, I'm not having a lot of fun. Just being pain-free or challenge-free, not going to work. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to the God Journey today. Man, what a crazy life this is. I cannot wait till this election is over, regardless of how it sorts out. The animosity between people. I just posted something on my Facebook this weekend trying to get people to think about worship protest. Really? Is that worship? Why are we using worship as a means to protest? And people are, oh, no, it's not that. We're just trying to be able to have a gathering because the government won't let us unless it's a protest. So, and I'm like, really? And then people got all into masks, no masks. It's just,
wow.
I'm amazed at how much anguish there is out there over things like this, and how little, because on both sides, you know, the one side comes at it, just, we have the right to do whatever we want. I'm free. I think masks cause more disease than they don't. And then you got other people going, what are you thinking, man? Why aren't you loving people in the world? And then I got accused of resisting the Holy Spirit because there's great stuff going on in these meetings they're calling worship. All I was saying was, couldn't we find a better term for what we're doing, first of all? And then find out that a lot of it is motivated by people who are still just upset that the government allowed protesters in the street and they're not allowing Christian services to go on in closed buildings where the corona epidemic is spreading. Which to me, I don't think the government allows protests, although you can get a permit to protest, which is what they're doing. I mean, why are we taking our cues from the world? Why are we? And why you're so angry if somebody sees it differently than you do? Sarah and I voted last week. I'm done. I'm out of this election. The media now, say everything you want. I've already done. I've already locked my vote for not only for the national stuff, but for local stuff as well. And I'm ready for everybody else to be done with it. But I am afraid that no matter how this comes out, the polarization in our country just grows greater and greater.
That would be my fear as well. And even just the fact that, will this election be over the end of November? Will we actually be able to get some resolve and move forward and attempt to heal as a country, whatever that looks like? And whether we have Joe Biden or Donald Trump as our president moving forward, I think we just need to get past this uncertainty and the turbulence to where we can at least maybe try to, at the very least at the local level, start to bring some healing and some consistency and some encouragement back into our communities.
It won't, though. I mean, it didn't for the last 4 years. Yeah. We have not learned yet that manipulating political power the way we do is healthy for our country or for the future of our democracy. That discussion isn't happening yet. It's, we're going to beat you. And if we do, then I'm going to spend the next 4 years trying to beat you. And then you're going to spend the next 4 years. And all the while, our country morale, our country's sense of civility is just in the toilet. And it's so frustrating to me to not just see, I mean, I get when the world lives that way. I don't get when Christ followers live that way. I don't get that there's not, I was telling somebody this week, and I know people will be ticked off about this, and this is bigger than Donald Trump or not Donald Trump. But I voted for Trump in 2016 because I just couldn't stand to see another Clinton in the White House with all the stuff they've got going on. So I did it hoping he would rise to the occasion. Well, he hasn't risen to the occasion, particularly with all the support he had from Christians that were supportive of him. Yeah. Maybe he would be different. But after this weekend and seeing the way people responded, just a simple post about semantics, it tells me not only did Trump not become like us, we became like him. Mm. That spirit of bullying, anger, I have my rights, you can stick it in your ear if you don't like it, that now is very much in play among people who profess a love for Jesus and a calling to live in the world as his people. They've become the bullies that he is, even with other Christians, which just shocks me. Old friends of mine, why are you being so mean to me? I don't get it. Just because you didn't like what I said, you get to bully it?
Do you think that we have become like Donald Trump, or do you think Donald Trump is a personification of where we have become as a nation? And he's simply a personification of that.
Well, in some ways, he is the fulfillment of the polarization. I mean, he expresses that. But I'm talking about people who 4 years ago wouldn't talk this way to other Christians or wouldn't talk that way to the world. They just wouldn't. They've taken on more of that flavor from the bullying, arrogant approach. And I find it sad. So, no, I don't think anything is going to change after Election Day. Mm-hmm. Except that we'll be even more polarized no matter who wins. I'm concerned that people are actually not the bulk of our citizenry, but the extremes are going to take weapons into the street to express their frustration. I think there'll be people die. I think there'll be conflicts that will involve arms, because that's how we've set this thing up. It's a life or death battle. And if you lose, the country will be destroyed.
No matter which candidate gets elected, the challenge is that the response, that it's more in a place of hostility right now, where either way it's villainized. And so either there's going to be one side of the argument that's angry and the other side of the argument is going to be self-entitled and super excited, or the other side is going to be angry and one side's going to be self-entitled. Like, it's going to go either way. So what would it take to heal our nation on a political level? Do you think the federal leadership of our country is even salvageable?
No, the existing leadership we have now is not. They're so jaded by this interplay of tit for tat, and that's just increased. So you've done bad to me, so I'm going to do bad to you. And whether we get into, you know, if Biden gets in, are we going to pack the court now to make up for the Republicans not doing what they said they would do during the Obama administration, doing it differently for Donald Trump? And it was always about power. It was never about doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It's going to, I love the conversations I'm in now with people with the language of healing for a polarized nation. We're actually with groups, a college in Texas that's trying to sort through some of this racial unrest in our culture and using the language of healing to do it. And I'm actually excited that we're getting a different conversation. Are there going to be people on a national stage have the boldness to do that? Not till there's a groundswell of normal Americans learning to do it in their world. It may percolate up. But right now, I don't see the will in Washington to have a different conversation. I don't even see the will in most Christians to have a different conversation than this political bashing that they've become accustomed to. And that hurts my heart, man. I was before God this week just saying, this really makes me sad that there's not a way to negotiate a conversation without people people I know picking sides and bashing each other on my Facebook page. And I just felt like God said, read Isaiah again. Just go back to Isaiah. And I'm like, Isaiah's not one of my favorite dudes. I like a lot of his stuff. Scripture, after all. Jeremiah is my favorite prophet, but Isaiah's the guy where God says, listen, I want you to do what you do, what I'm asking you to do, until everyone in Israel rejects you. And so when I read Isaiah, I'm like going, results don't matter. Living in the space God has asked me to live in is what matters. Now, other people may listen and find a different way of living. Other people may choose to give in darker into the polarization. But I really do feel like for people that want to walk with Jesus right now, there really is a different way to approach all this stuff. And we got caught up on the liberal side of it or the conservative side of it and are throwing firebombs at each other. And I don't mean that literally, although that's happening too, but I mean it more figuratively. We're not representing who Jesus is in the world. And God's not asking me to fret about results. He's asking me to be true. Because even in that, Isaiah 1, which I love, is God's saying, I'm done, man. I haven't showed up at your feast and I don't care about your sacrifices. And it's like, oh my gosh, they're doing things God asked them to do. And he said, I haven't been there. I'm not there because they're done. It's not the spirit I want. And I look at some of protests going on. I'm going, it's not the spirit of Christ. It just isn't.
Yeah.
It's very much that we're going to do what we want to do, and we can't sing, and the government said we can't, so we're going to protest sing because that, you know, and it's going, okay, when one of those becomes a super spreader event and you've put COVID in the world because you couldn't just say, you know what, if we don't sing for a year, God will still be God. That won't change anything. And they just, we're going to do it because we have the right to do it. And people are lying to us about the danger of it. So we're just going to do it anyway. Or worse yet, we're just trusting God that nothing bad happens to us. And what I think when I hear that is, throw yourself from the pinnacle of the temple. That's what, just take the presumption that nothing bad's going to happen. I know good followers of Jesus who have had COVID, died from COVID, or have just wrestled through some serious effects with it. So to think you're a Jesus person makes you vaccinated.
Completely immune to that.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. But anyway. Hey, a few more emails before we get lost on all that. Going back to the podcast we did about Bigger Than Our Mistakes, where you kind of open up your heart. There's a few emails that I got after we talked last time, or at least didn't read them last time. They got lost in my list, I think is what happened. But just this, this is from Roger. Wayne, I listened to this podcast this morning and stopped several times to wipe away the tears. Kyle Tug, no, tore at my heart as he exposed his pain. Your sensitivity to Kyle was profound, whether his dad was making an observation or a value statement that little boy could not separate the destruction it had caused him. I know that kind of pain, 70 years of it. Jesus, the great physician, touching hearts with the prescription of love without rejection. I was truly touched, and the tears showed that there is still darkness needing to be touched by love. Jesus is doing this daily. I love that. I love that. I think it's always true. We expose our pain. Other people get to expose theirs. It makes a safe place for people. You know what? I've had that same thing in my head, some unfortunate incident with my dad, whatever. Mark wrote me this. You just set a new world's record for best podcast ever. I am only halfway through and I am crying. The spirit is speaking to me. Who would have thought after all these podcasts that the best was yet to come? Mark's a good brother up in Portland area. And Lindy wrote this. Oh, my. I am in tears. It's on the blog. She said, I am in tears. Erupted during Kyle's prayer and then more during yours, Wayne. I prayed, oh, Father, Kyle is praying my prayer. I'm so shaken at how Father is touching my life the last few days. What a heartfelt time. Wayne and Kyle, this is rich because of the inside of the legalism I was buried under for 50 years. My heart was so crushed and broken for decades with preaching from Jeremiah 17:9 from Old Covenant Law that for the most of my life, I could not even give attention to what my heart was directing. I renounced it for years as probably just more pride, self-condemnation. Shame has been the continual traffic director of my mind. This is so great. I had so many statements made to me during my preteen years that scarred me for life. Thank you so much for this stellar podcast. I love the way God unwinds stuff that just gets seated in there from our past and erupts someday, and then when it erupts, it's because God's touching it. God wants to bring some healing to it.
And I think the beauty of it too was that, at least for me, I didn't go hunting for that conversation. It wasn't like I was sitting there saying, oh, I need to dredge something up. And I've, you know, that God, what's going on in my life? How do I make myself better? I was just living life. And God started to bring some things into my life that drew that conversation to the surface. And, you know, and then the beauty of it is, and the joy of it is that he brought you into that process as well. And just the way that he's equipped you in your story to be able to walk through that with me. And the cool part is that he does that in unique ways. Like if we were to try to go back and manuscript that again, there's no way.
No.
There's no chance.
No, sure.
And if we tried, I mean, if we tried to copyright it and make a 5 easy step plan out of that, it wouldn't happen either, right?
Or each week try and come up with another deep thing I love that Jesus's life plays out in the normalness of life. That he kind of times those things, and when things surface and the conversations I'm in and you and I having that, and there's no way to package it, no way to make it happen as an ongoing kind of podcast, but it was a lovely moment of grace, and there'll be other lovely moments of grace, but they'll be different.
Yeah.
And we don't orchestrate them. I love that we can't.
Especially as a counselor, I've tried. You know, that's been something for me. Like I have such a huge heart, and I've had the joy and the blessing to be able to have some incredible experiences like what we recorded together that have been very freeing times in my life. And as a therapist, I've experienced those, and I want to be able to be somebody who can facilitate those types of experiences for others. And yet, especially early in my counseling years, I found myself so stressed out because I was trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
And my supervisor, who was a strong believer, she's like, Kyle, you can't outwork your client. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, you're outworking your client. You're trying to make your client do work that either God's not timing, the timing isn't right, or for whatever reason, they're not ready to go there. And so, yeah, you feel like you're hitting your head against the wall because you're outworking your client. You're going somewhere where God isn't even addressing yet.
Such a great
statement. Or it's not ready.
That's such a great statement. I love that, outworking your client. It's not going to work.
and yet the times when I've had the privilege to be able to be on the counseling role of that, or the sojourner role of that, and it's been in his spirit, in his vein, it's just been beautiful because it surprised us both. Like in the counseling room, it caught us both off guard. And then we look back on it like, didn't see that one coming, but that was awesome.
Wouldn't it be great if we could be more relaxed and recognize those events when they're happening, rather than so busy trying to orchestrate an event like that we choke it off? I know one of the things I've been made real sensitive to, and I'm talking to people, particularly on the road, and I'm with people I don't know real well, but in the midst of talking and getting to know them, something just kind of a throwaway thing, and yet you can see the tearing up in their eyes, that it touches something in them. And the old Wayne was kind of, oh my gosh, don't want to go there, don't want to make them cry, don't want to make it awkward. And so you just, you lean out of that space instead of recognizing, hey, spontaneous tears and being choked with emotion is pointing to where God's usually got his fingerprints on something. And so rather than leaning away from that moment, stopping it and kind of leaning into it, what are you feeling right there? And having a different conversation that's not trying to save everybody's embarrassment, but simply lean into the revelation that God's giving. And for me, I notice when something causes me to tear up, even if it's, I'm watching a movie, but something on the screen has created this emotional moment for me, I'm going to probe that a little bit. What did that touch?
Yeah.
What's in there that I need to think about, or what's God revealing? And it usually is not that hard to find it.
So what caused you to lean away from it? When you saw those moments earlier on in your journey with God and in ministry, I use air quotes.
Boy,
there.
Yeah, you better. And I was ministering to people back in the day.
Absolutely, with authority. What do you think internally was going on for you that caused you to lean away from those conversations where now you recognize them and you're not scared to press into them a little bit or explore them a little bit?
I guess what's even weirder about it is when you're teaching in front of people and you see eyes tear up, you just know something significant's going on and you think that's awesome. But in a conversation with somebody and they start to tear up and you're kind of like, oh my gosh, something's getting to them and there's other people. If I was alone with them, it would be different. Mm-hmm. But if I'm in a room of people, you know, it's like, I just don't want to draw attention to them. I feel like their vulnerability is going to get stomped on. You know, all those other considerations came into it.
Yeah.
And for the last few years, recognizing what I've recognized here, I've just kind of, particularly if they're talking to me and it's in a public group, we'll just lean back into that space. What's going on there? Why did that touch in you? Do you mind talking about it? And creating a space where they can talk about it. But here's the danger. When we do that, I kind of open up a real tender place in someone's heart and you do it in a room full of people, sometimes everybody turns into that person's counselor because they're touched by the need. And everything we've learned is give advice. Yeah. And then all of a sudden advice starts and I have to stop there and say, no, really, hold it a minute. Why don't you talk to me? Let's not put them on the spot. This is or somebody even worse makes a joke and a bad joke just because they're uncomfortable because something's happening. So yuck it up. And I've been in moments where whatever the Holy Spirit was doing got killed by that. And there was no way to go back and get there as a group. Now, I'd often go back to that person individually. I'd find him afterwards and say, hey, there's something happening there. Let's go back to that. Something you want to talk about? And oftentimes that has worked out. But I've actually had to pull people out of a meeting and say, listen, your jokes aren't working. I know you're doing it because you're insecure. I get all that. But you're choking out the life of this thing. Can you let it go? Can you let what God's doing go on? But I get the discomfort. I think at times it was just I didn't want people to feel put on the spot. And I didn't know, I didn't recognize, I think a lot of it early on, I didn't recognize that God was touching something here. I figured it was something going on at home, something going on at work, and they're just really sad. And I don't want their sadness to pull down the meeting, which when I'm aware of me or when I'm aware of them, it was I didn't want it to put them on the spot in some way that would be awkward for them. So you just kind of gloss it over and keep moving. But I haven't done that in a long time because I recognize so many ways that when the Holy Spirit is touching something, it's our emotions usually are right at the surface. And that's not a bad thing.
Have you ever pressed in with the person who's telling the joke?
In the meeting?
Have you ever?
Like, why does that make you so insecure or whatever?
Well, just like what, or even just ask like, so what was it that in this situation that made you feel like you needed to share a joke or to change the direction of the conversation we were having? What drew that out of you? Have you ever had that conversation with somebody?
Alone later. Not usually in the moment, because I feel like I know where it's coming from, first of all, so I'm not all that curious.
Yeah.
but it would be great to ask them to kind of process what's going on here. The other part is it would just take away from what's already happening in that moment. It would just, okay, you have hijacked the meeting for a moment. Now you've hijacked it permanently because we're going to go a different direction. So that's the danger, I guess, of having conversations for meetings instead of lectures. In the old days of lecturing, where everybody just sat there and took notes, so much easier and so much more fruitless.
I definitely understand the derailing. I guess I had the privilege of, in my graduate work, I got to work with two counselors that their niche was working in group therapy and just the power of the way that one member's reaction to another member's story, how that could become and actually a very, very powerful or very therapeutic moment. And I just remember an individual that they were in a session we were working on. They actually shared something and it was very, very powerful, very emotional. And another person just like that dropped like an insecure joke that was almost like borderline insensitive. I was like, whoa, like seriously, dude, like you're going to bring that in right now? And yet what I discovered, and I would love your feedback on this, but what I've kind of found with them is that the tears for one person is the joke for another person. that that joke might be their version of tears that they don't know how to navigate yet. And that was just really intriguing to me, watching two very seasoned group therapists navigate that. And so that's the reason why I asked, because it was like, well, I wonder if there was something laying under the surface on that one. But I get too that the person who's having that experience and you have that conversation with them, yeah, there's a very good chance that you're not going to be able to bring back to what they were experiencing, because now all of a sudden somebody's completely derailed it.
Yeah, and I agree that I think somebody making a joke or whatever is a way of reacting to what's going on, maybe a negative reaction, but they're reacting to it. It's just there's a real difference, right, between a therapy group that's all there for that and a group of strangers that are in a room together for a couple of hours to have a conversation with me. So
that's fair.
That's the difference. But I've had moments like that too, where that's given us a way to take down a road that might be more effective. But I keep telling people, I am completely unqualified to do what God's asked me to do in the world. I don't have training on leading encounter groups or any of that stuff. I just have a love for people and a desire to help them grow. And I've enjoyed being in rooms where it's been more open conversation, even though I know there are some people who come to my meetings that wish I would just teach. They want to take notes. I know that's true, but I will give as much teaching during a conversation as I would give in a lecture. But instead of using the illustrations of my life, I'll use the illustrations of theirs or what's happening in the room. And sometimes, you know, some conversations just go great. There's never any trouble anywhere. And it's just we get to interact about who God is and how he works in the world and help people see him a little more clearly in their lives. But I haven't done that for 8 months. I haven't even been to an airport to crawl on an airplane to do any of that kind of things.
Do you miss it?
No. Not
I know you said you've got Zoom stuff that you've been doing quite a bit, but...
You know, I miss the connections with people. I don't miss going to the airport. I saw a video of the airport on TV the other night. And I'm going, I haven't been there, and I can't remember how long. And no, I don't miss that. No, I don't miss a lot of that stuff. But
yeah,
I miss the interactions with people. I miss what I learn in a conversation, regardless of what other people learn. I learn an awful lot. But
yeah,
I've been really busy during this virus pandemic anyway. I mean, I finished this afternoon the devotional that we've been working on.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I'm reading through some other parts of it this afternoon, just trying to edit everything up before I toss it over to the editor. And I'm really excited about that. I've really been renewed. It's been like being in those conversations again, because that's where a lot of those blog posts and articles, they came out of conversations. So it's drawn me back to where I learned that, or it's refreshed things that you kind of forget in your own journey, because, boy, that was a neat moment, and I love that freedom. And then you kind of get away from it over here, and you didn't really notice you were getting away from it. And so I have loved this book. I hope we have it out mid-December. It's the goal. I hope other people enjoy it, too, whether they do or not. This has been a great experience for me to read through a year's worth of thoughts from the last 20 years of my journey.
So what's been give me one thought that's really stood out to you recently that you were reading back through and you're like, man, that just really resonates with me.
Yeah, that would be unfair to ask. My gosh, there are so many. But it's taken me back through some of the embracing his glory stuff, which is more recent, but we've added some of that in. I think the things about certainty and living in the freedom of finding my certainty in God alone, and not the world we live in, and the freshness of how God transforms us in love, how love displaces the sin or the more unworthy appetites in our life, how that connection with him, it doesn't mean I get to be better at resisting my sin. It means I have less temptation when I'm inside his love than I do when I'm navigating my way by my own best thoughts.
I love that you talk about the certainty as you bring that up, because I was just reflecting this morning as I was driving about all the different prophetic voices that were about 2020 and how 2020 was going to be the year of clarity, how it was going to be this year of revelation and this year of clarity, and it was going to be this amazing year. And everybody was so excited about 2020. Now there's a whole plethora of attire and swag that you can get that's like, get this year over with. I want my ticket out of this year. Like, we want it done. And yet, I think that this year has been absolutely that. I think it has been a year of clarity about, specifically for me, what I've been trying to place my certainty in. that I thought I had my certainty dialed in on my trust with God, and that he was my primary source of trust and affirmation and reassurance. And yet when disaster hits, that's very revealing. When things get completely thrown in the air and totally disrupted and chaos erupts, that is very telling and very revealing. It's not comfortable.
Yeah, it can be very clarifying, can it? I mean, that's the thing where you guys say, it's a bit clarifying year, and you get the idea that, oh man, this will be great. And you don't realize how it's going to happen that you get there. That was one of the things I was reading this afternoon in my own devotional, was poor Joseph. He has this dream of ruling over his brothers, and he gets captured by that. But little does he know, that involves being kidnapped, being sold into slavery, being arrested in prison. And that's years of misery to the place where he is finally, yes, ruling over his brothers as a liaison of the government of Egypt. But it's all under the title Jehovah Sneaky. I don't know if you, as a kid, we always said Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah Rapha. They don't use Jehovah anymore. We use Yahweh. But that was the way it was taught when I was growing up. And someone said to me quite a while back about Jehovah Sneaky, and they spelled it with a T-S-N-I. It's like a Hebrew form of to sneaky. And I just think, oh, that is so God, right? I mean, God puts stuff on our hearts. We think we're going that direction. And then God has a whole thing coming at us that we had no clue that what I thought was a great promise was going to take me through a very dark water to get there. We kind of started that with the puppy. You want the joy of a puppy? You're going to have some sleepless nights. You want the joy of a child? Well, there's the first 3 or 4 years of that. It's just a lot of work and and giving up stuff. And yet the joy of those things is worth it. And when we live these, that goes maybe to our whole discussion. We live these self-protected lives of trying to avoid pain and avoid anything discomforting. And, you know, even going back to my post this weekend, even if the discomfort of not being in quote unquote a worship service troubles you, why does it trouble you? Yeah. Was that song service for you anyway, or is it about God? And if we gave it up for a year because we were serving a culture that's in the throes of a pandemic, does God's life change in us at all? And it will change in us, but it will get better, not worse. There's things that God does in the discomforts of our lives, but we're just so anti-discomfort. We just really are. Yeah. Oh, God, get this over with. Oh, God, I want to move on. Oh, God. And I know through this whole pandemic, one thing, every time I can't do the thing I would normally do, choose to do, want to do, whatever, I realize when that door is closed, there's an endless set of opportunities over here that are still possible inside whatever prudent restrictions are necessary because of the pandemic. That God's not limited to the old forms that we've got to have because we got... That was our comfort zone. We liked that stuff instead of, you know, it got bigger than all that.
Instead of seeing it as an invitation for creativity and innovation, let's try something new. Let's try something fresh. Let's explore what the Spirit might be doing that we wouldn't have seen before because we were so entrenched in our comfort zone.
Yeah. And that to me is the excitement of this adventure of knowing Him. When I was more religious, it was more about programs and strategies and models. And if I do these three things, God will do that thing over there. And it was always me in control of it, or thinking I was, that's better said.
Yeah.
And I love this part of the journey. Just, and so I'm really pandemic prepared in the sense that, man, I don't need the certainty of how this is coming out. Is this the one of the last birth pangs before the second coming of Christ? It might be. I don't know. I don't care, because all it involves is waking up today and living inside what's before me today and listening to God as to how you're interacting with my fears, my hopes, my challenges, my joblessness, my inability to travel. Income for live streams just... because I'm not traveling, and I just go, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect how God provides for Sarah and me. It hasn't for a long time. So we just move quietly down the road, and every distress in my life now, which I used to be the world's biggest whiner. I could probably have gotten an Olympic gold medal in whining if they'd had such a thing. So much so that Sarah put up a thou shalt not whine sign in our kitchen. So she could just point to it now and then. I'm going, yeah, I'm a, and I'd whine at God, world-class whiner at God. And I'm not even tempted to that anymore. I don't even have it come up. It just, for me, everything that isn't what I want opens a door for something new that I want more that I don't even know I want. But when I can't lean into my old normal space, it's because God has other space for me to live in. And his unlimited sense of opportunity is so outstanding to me. And that's where I want to live. And that's where I want to encourage other people to live. And the whole idea that I'm not in control, never was, don't have to be, that's a gift. That's a joy. Rather than, I must have done something wrong. What did I do? How do I get out of it? How do I... Oh, I have so many of those old thought trails that are completely unused and overgrown. I've not been down some of those in a while. Now, I still have others that I go down now and then, but some of those are just done. I haven't been on that trail. And now that trail would be tough to get on. It's hard to even see it in the trees because it's so overgrown now. And it's easier for my heart to lean into that space that just did, okay, God, you've got something here. I don't know what it is yet. Or God, I know you love me, even if everything's just going to crazy, horrible stuff, but I know you love me. So that's not an issue. Now I get to have a different conversation, different leaning, because I'm not tweaked by those things. And I see a lot of that reading through this devotional again. I just go, man, this has been such a great journey. The last 25 years of my life, if I had missed these, I would have been really sad when I found out in eternity, you missed this. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of other stuff like that, but
yeah,
I'm really blessed that the last 25 years have changed the trajectory of my life. And again, that started because of a betrayal. That started out of incredibly great pain, but it opened doors to such a better journey for me.
Yeah. And I just would want to encourage the people who are just starting this journey, just exploring this journey, that, I mean, for me, I mean, you're hearing Wayne, who's been doing this journey for 25 years. I've been doing this journey for 10 years. And the process of trust and God's patience in developing that relational trust, it's going to take time.
Absolutely.
Just relax in that. Enjoy that process. And if you're just starting that conversation in the midst of the COVID, I'm sorry, because I mean, that's kind of a brutal place to start the conversation, but you're starting it, and he is so gracious to walk through it with you in the space that your heart is ready. I don't know. That's just what came up to me as you were just sharing.
And probably what's saddest is we don't lean into new levels of trust well when all is good. We get lost in ourselves. And that's Israel's history, right? In times of plenty, they get lost into idols and comfort and other stuff. And it's only when the pressure's on that you go, oh my gosh, maybe we turn our hearts back to God. And I know mine, it may be coming the pandemic. Mine was out of a big betrayal. A lot of my best transformations have come out of excruciating pain, because when the stuff you have doesn't work anymore, instead of lamenting that, complaining about it, all that, which I used to do, spent years doing that. Now it's just, okay, my heart's turning to go, what else is here? What else are you doing? And that recovery time has been really, now it's immediate, but even through these past 25 years, it didn't change overnight. There was, instead of spending a year whining, I spent 3 or 4 months, and then I'd lean into that. Or then it became 2 or 3 weeks, and then it became, over time, that distance shrinks. And you get more immediate at responding to, okay, God, you've got something here I don't see. And that saves me. I look back now, all the time I wasted going to anxiety and then re-scheming, replanning, trying to find a way out, and then going, oh my gosh. And those not working. Oh, they're never working, because it's Wayne's idea about the universe instead of God's idea about the universe. So yeah, it's been a great journey.
I love getting to explore this with you. Once again, I've got stuff I've got to go think about now.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.